And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Members of Generation Z in their late teens and early 20s are more likely to believe in God than millennials in their late 20s and 30s, according to polling that suggests the trend for younger people being less religious is changing. It has been suggested that the ease with which young people can access information about faith and find like-minded people online may have helped to build and bolster their faith. Experts said they face less stigma from their peers for being open about their religious beliefs and may have been driven to think more about them during the pandemic. The survey by YouGov also found, however, that religious and spiritual belief in Britain has declined overall during the pandemic, with the proportion of people citing faith in God or some kind of higher spiritual power falling from 49% to 44% between January and November this year. The proportion of atheists and agnostics increased from 51% to 56% over the same period. The survey conducted at the end of November asked 2,169 people about their faith and gave them four options, asking if they believed in God, if they did not believe in God but did believe in some kind of higher spiritual power, if they believed in neither, or if they didn't know. The poll found that those aged over 60 were most religious, with 36% saying they believed in God. This fell to 26% of 40 to 59-year-olds and fell again to 19% of 25 to 39-year-olds. The figure increased for the youngest age group to 23% of 16 to 24-year-olds. This was a rise from 21% in January when the question was asked of 18 to 24-year-olds. The past three times YouGov has asked the question, in August and January 2020 and August 2019, the youngest age group was the least religious. Overall, the proportion of people who said they believed in God dipped between January and November from 28% to 27%, while the number who said they believed in a higher spiritual power fell from 21% to 17%. The proportion of atheists who believed in neither rose from 40% to 41%, whilst the proportion of agnostic don't-knows rose from 11% to 15%. Religion experts said it was hard to tell from a single survey if a new trend was emerging, but Linda Woodhead, a professor of religion and society at Lancaster University, said that young people now face less stigma over their religious views. She said, "I know from my students that the internet has made it easier to search and find people like you. What we want to see sociologically is whether the internet will make peer-to-peer a more important factor in being religious than parental transmission." Stephen Bullivant, a professor of the sociology of religion at St Mary's University in Twickenham, said that the YouGov figures buck the long-term expectation that age groups get progressively less religious as they get younger, and said that there were likely to be a large proportion of 16 to 24-year-olds who were born into relatively religious households from Muslim, immigrant, Catholic or Black Christian families. Dr. Lewis Lee, a fellow of the University of Kent's Department of Religious Studies, said, "It is highly likely the pandemic has impacted on people's existential beliefs and practices, but I'm not yet convinced it will have made any group more or less religious in the longer term, though time will tell." She said that times of crisis can be a time of exploration and added, "Possibly this year's data indicate that young people are going through that kind of exploratory period more than others." The flames of Europe's persecution of witches blaze fiercely in the Bavarian city of Eichstätt, where an estimated 400 innocent people were tortured and executed for consulting with the devil. The interrogators even devised their own methods to extract confessions and denunciations, included helmet cutting in which a spiked metal band was tightened around the head. About 25,000 people, mainly women but also men and children, were burnt at the stake in German lands between the 15th and 18th centuries. Across Europe, including Britain, about 60,000 died. After 400 years of near silence from the local Catholic diocese, Bishop Gregor Maria Hank has described it as a bleeding wound in the history of our church and promised to place a memorial plaque in the local cathedral. The statement came after years of pressure from campaigners who have called on the Catholic and Protestant churches to face up to their guilt. It's good that they have done something, but of course it's not nearly enough, Wolfram Kastner, a Munich-based artist, said. He is credited with pushing the Eichstätt diocese to examine its past. The trials were run by secular courts, but campaigners say the church was culpable. Religious doctrine about witches and the devil was applied in accusing people of fictitious crimes. More than 50 towns have apologized and recognized the injustice after a campaign started by Hartmut Hegeler, a retired German pastor, in 2011. The church was scared of the Reformation, and the witch trials were meant to combat it, Mr. Hegeler told the Times. Anyone turning their back on the Catholic faith was labeled as being in league with the devil. It worked. When Mr. Kastner came across original interrogation transcripts in Eichstätt, he was so shocked that he launched a campaign in 2017 that included reading out the judgments of victims in the cathedral square. He overcame local resistance to open an exhibition on one of the most prominent victims of the persecution, Ursula Bonschap, a wealthy innkeeper and mayor's wife. She was arrested in 1627 at the age of 36. After 20 days of torture, she confessed to charges including performing weather magic, digging up the bodies of dead children, fornicating with the devil, and poisoning people and animals. She was burnt at the stake, but first granted the mercy of being decapitated by sword. Women were tortured 12, 13 times until they confessed to the nonsense the interrogators cooked up in their perverted brains, Mr. Kastner told the Times. They and their families were robbed of all of their assets. It is not enough to put up a plaque and talk about bleeding wounds. It should be a matter of course after all these centuries to name and rehabilitate all the victims, but they're not ready to do that yet. Mr. Kastner said that people in Eichstätt were still afraid of the church, a big landowner and employer. The Baroque town is dominated by grand church buildings that include the bishop's residence, a Benedictine monastery, and Germany's only Catholic university. When we did the exhibition, 3,000 people came to see it, but not the bishop, the mayor, or the university professors, he said. One teacher came with her mother and then signed our petition, but she returned after an hour and asked us to delete her signature because she was afraid of losing her job. Mr. Kastner wants the diocese to dedicate a building to the care of victims with torture. He said that the plan to continue his lobbying by placing plaques with the names of witches along the path up to the Gallows Hills execution site. Germany accounted for almost half of Europe's witch trials because it was divided into many states, and local rulers saw the persecution as a means to stabilize their power. You identify common enemies and make everyone feel threatened so that people support you, Mr. Hegeler said. Clerical misogyny also played a part. Women were still craftspeople in the Middle Ages. They were even guildmasters in some cases, Eva Martini, a political scientist, said. This kind of persecution and view of women actually succeeded in pushing them into a marginal position in society. Eichstätt ranked along the Bavarian cities of Bamberg and Würzburg, two other bastions of witch burning. More than 1,000 were killed in Bamberg alone, where Ralph Kluss, the author and campaigner, plans to open a museum on the persecution. Bamberg was the world capital of witch burning, Kluss told the Times. It built a dedicated torture prison, and the townsfolk could hear the screaming. Unlike elsewhere, Bamberg had a rule that witches always be burnt alive rather than being executed beforehand. A bishop has criticized proposals to slash clergy numbers and redraw parish boundaries in a bid to recoup £150 million worth of coronavirus pandemic losses. The government's restrictions on weddings and funerals in a bid to curb the spread of COVID-19, as well as annual fetes and limited collection plate donations, has plunged the Church of England into a financial crisis. The institution lost £150 million in donations alone during the months when collection plates went unused and fees for special services such as weddings, funerals and christenings dried up, according to the Daily Mail. It also feared the figure may in fact be higher, prompting plans for money-saving reforms. Among those plans discussed are believed to have included a cut in the number of bishops from more than 100 to as few as 10 and a redrawing of parish boundaries to reduce their number from 12,500 to 9,000. It is believed that the plans are intended to be made public in February. The Church's Governing Council, the General Synod, is likely to vote on them in July. Responding to the reports, Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, formerly the Church of England's Bishop of Rochester, said, "I think the last thing they should cut are the pastors, bishops or clergy. It is better to reduce the bureaucracy rather than the number of bishops, because people tend to identify with bishops as the face of a place. Especially big cities like Bradford or Birmingham, if you did away with bishops, who would be the Church of England's face in such a place where it is needed?" he added. "But there is a lot of scope for amalgamating dioceses and offices, financial services, pension arrangements, that kind of thing, and this is all within the hands of church commissioners." The reports come after the Daily Telegraph reported in October that village churches are finding it difficult to draw the same level of congregation numbers and funds as their urban counterparts, with the coronavirus pandemic exacerbating the pre-existing problems. Rural churches continue to struggle to pay their vicars, and as a result, clergy and wardens issued a warning to the Archbishop of Canterbury to act now to save the village church. The Telegraph spoke to multiple serving and retired clergy and members of General Synod, as well as wardens, treasurers and laypeople, who revealed their fears that the Church of England could collapse in rural communities. They also spoke of a multi-million pound debt facing countryside parishes following a pressure to contribute to the voluntary parish share. According to the latest available accounts that the Church of England published in 2018, its parishes brought in just under £1.1 billion. Of this, just over £500 million came from giving, including money put into collection plates or contactless payments and regular tax-efficient donations by bank order. Another £100 million came from legacies and fees for services, and £63 million from fundraising and appeals. A Church of England spokesman said it was true to say that the maximum fall in any one diocese is less than 20%, but it was still too early to calculate the overall loss. The spokesperson added, "For at least the last 10 years, the Church of England has been regularly reviewing the size and number of dioceses so as to make the most efficiently and effectively share the gospel and serve the whole of our nation. Along with other communities and organisations, the current pandemic has brought this discussion further up the agenda, but at the moment it is no more than that, a discussion. There are no specific proposals under discussion. Different bishops have very different views on what could or what should happen." And finally, Pastor Jamie and his church elder Paul ended up in a heated argument over a seemingly minor worship detail. "I suggest we go home and pray to God to grant us peaceful hearts," said Pastor Jamie as Paul stormed past him into the churchyard. After worship the next Sunday morning, Paul greeted Pastor Jamie warmly. "I took your advice," he said, "and went home and said a prayer." "Great," said Jamie. "So did I. I prayed that God would grant us both peaceful hearts and a fresh start." "That's not what I prayed," said Paul. "I asked God to help me put up with you."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.